If you have your Bibles, you can turn to Matthew chapter 6. We will continue on in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And today we're going to talk about treasure. So it'll be on the screen behind me, but if you have your app, you can go there. If you want a hard copy, you can grab a Bible in the rack in the seat in front of you there. Just to let you know, there's a couple different varieties of Bibles we have in our seats. There's a blue one, blue covered one. It's a ESV, the English Standard Version. It'll be a little different. We have two types of NIV. Oh, I know, it's like, wow. 1984 and post-1984 after that. And so they're slightly different as well. And I'll mention a few of the little differences and the nuances here in this passage that come up. Just in words that are translated a little differently. It doesn't change the meaning, just translate a little differently. Verse 19, chapter 6, Matthew's Gospel. Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin," some NIV, ESV says rust, "destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin or rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Let's talk about treasure. To begin with, Jesus has no problem with us valuing things on the earth. In fact, an aspect of God's mandate for us as his people is to value creation. And one of the reasons why there is so many problems on the earth, just with, let's just say, pollution and managing natural resources, just those two areas. One of the reasons why there's so much problem, there's so many problems on the earth, is because we don't value creation like God does, right? And so wealth comes into it. How can we sell more stuff and make more money? And we don't care about the impact of some of the things that are going on, right? And so all of these have a bearing because we don't value creation like God does. Jesus has no problem with us valuing things. In fact, he has no problem with us treasuring things. The issue is, what things will we treasure? Our hearts are naturally inclined to move towards valuing or treasuring certain things. Jesus just wants to help us get it right, to understand what's significant, most important about our choices. He doesn't want us to get captivated by pursuing treasures that will inevitably pass away. They'll be lost. You can't take them with you, right? The issue at stake here is what captivates you. What captivates me? What am I enamored with? What are you enamored with? What do you spend your time thinking about? Whatever you spend your time thinking about, whatever you spend your time planning for, whatever you spend your energy on, those things are the things that you treasure. And if you pursue them, and pursue them, and pursue them, the indication here that Jesus says, it's not just something that you do that you're disconnected from, but your heart is connected. Your heart is actually connected to your thoughts. What comes out of your heart, Jesus says earlier, there are all kinds of things that come out, and it reveals where our treasure is. That's where our heart's going to be in the pursuit of those things. Do we find our value in acquiring and possessing things in the world, earthly things? In the context here, Jesus is specifically addressing three areas of human life. The first is the desire for some type of body covering. And I use body covering because I'm going to talk about Adam and Eve a little bit. But body covering, clothing, right? And so some of you, maybe you have more than one shirt in your closet. Maybe you have more than one pair of pants. Maybe you have more than one pair of shoes. I don't know. I just throw it out. In North America, we think nothing of having multiple items of clothing. It's just the way that we are. It's just the way we're wired. But it comes because we have a whole lot of money, and we can afford to spend it on these kinds of things. Now, the interesting thing is, if we want to compare it in a very simplistic kind of way, imagine Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and it's after they've sinned, and so they spend the majority of their time and their energy thinking about, planning about, strategizing how to find the very best fig leaf to cover themselves. They just search everywhere. That's all they do. They get up in the morning and they just are consumed with the thought of, where can I get the best fig leaf? Now, that would be silly for Adam and Eve to have done that. And yet that's exactly what we do in North America. We look for the best fig leaves, the most colorful fig leaves, the most the softest material of a fig leaf. I don't know, right? But it's what we do in North America. We spend our energy thinking about covering ourselves. Secondly, Jesus speaks about the desire to amass great quantities of food. He says, where vermin or rust destroy. The word translated vermin or rust carries the idea of eating away at something. And it refers to the spoiling action that rats or mice have on food. Now, in Jesus' day, they couldn't amass large quantities of food in the way that we do because they didn't have refrigeration, right? So they didn't have a second fridge. They didn't have a second freezer, right, to keep the milk or whatever. But they had grain bins. And what Jesus is talking about is people amassing great quantities of food, grain, right? But in the midst of that, they would always know, because they were an agriculturally based people group, they would know about mold and mildew and rust and rats and mice, and it would deplete, right? Plague would deplete their food supply. So Jesus says, just don't put all your energy and all your thought and all your planning into getting more and more and more. The third area that he addresses is the desire to amass earthly wealth, where thieves break in and steal, he says. Now, in Jesus' day, there were no banks, there were no safety deposit boxes, there were no vaults, there were no personal safes that you could change the combo on, right, and put in your valuables. There was none of that. So what the people would do was that they would hide their valuables in their home. They'd find a corner or place that they would hide stuff, or they would bury it underneath their home. Now, the problem was, in Jesus' day, the houses were constructed of a softer substance than what we have our houses constructed of today. So thieves would actually, they would dig through the soft clay, and they would make a hole in your house and go and steal your valuables. Jesus simply saying, you know that this happens, and so when you put your trust and your energy, your time into protecting earthly things, inevitably you end up losing them. I remember, and I've told this story before, but when I think it was maybe the first time that I went to Guatemala, and we had just purchased a new camera, and I thought, well, I don't want to take it because it's going to get stolen in Guatemala, so I left it at home. And that's the same time that I got a call finally from Sharice, or an internet message, and she said, our house got broken into, and they took the camera. I thought, that is hilarious. But not only they took the camera, they took the van, and I mean, unfortunately, that was it. But they broke into the garage, and then into the house, took the camera, and the van, and I don't know, took pictures of a burning van because they burnt it. Silly, right? But it happens. And when we put all of our time and our energy into this, there's great disappointment that comes to us, because there's no lasting satisfaction that comes in the pursuit of these things. Jesus wasn't condemning food or clothing or wealth. He wasn't saying that it's wrong to save or to set aside or to plan for the future. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 to 11 actually addresses the dangers of not setting aside a certain amount of provision for seasons where you might not have enough. It says this, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man." What can we learn from the ant? Well, the ant plans for the future. No one's telling them to plan for the future. The ant just knows that it needs to plan for the future. They just do that. Ants store up in seasons of plenty so that they have something in seasons of scarcity. And they don't amass wealth. They use what they acquire. So what's the real issue? In Luke chapter 12, verse 15, Jesus says this. He says, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." The problem is that sin corrupts our heart's devotion to God, and instead of pursuing and valuing him, relying on him, we strategize all the different ways that we can take care of ourselves. What do we need to do to provide for ourselves, to look out for our future so that we don't have to worry about anything anymore? And it's not so that we can trust God and rely on God in the midst of those times, right? It's that we don't need him anymore. And that's a prominent theme in North American culture. We don't need God because we have enough on our own. We can do what it is that we want to do. We have plans and we can pursue all those things. Instead of finding our security in God, we try to maximize our security in things of the earth. It gives us the illusion that we can take care of ourselves. But Jesus says here that there's no security in any earthly pursuits, no eternal security. And those earthly desires, those longings that take our heart's desire away from God. And ultimately, here's the thing, if God didn't create us for a connection, an intimate reliance on him and a faith in him and a trust in him and a hope in him, if our life wasn't entwined in a desire to know and love and serve God, then we could do whatever we wanted to do and there would be no problem at all. But if our heart's devotion is intended, if God had created us with this vacuum at a heart level that's only filled in our pursuit of him, then nothing else will satisfy us. And if people are honest, they will say that in anything that I've ever pursued, I got the car of my dreams. I got the home of my dreams, the house I was looking at. I got the golf clubs of my dreams. Anyone? Right? And they will say that ultimately it doesn't satisfy. Because things get broken and dented I got a text from Ryan, and he's not here this morning, so I'll tell a story on him. He went with his girlfriend and their family up to Sun Peaks, and he was parking his vehicle and he backed in somehow, and you can ask him about it when he's here next week, and he'll wonder, what is going on? Why does everybody know? And he backed into a place and there was this white concrete pole. And he said, "Dad, there was no room." I'm thinking, well, then why did you try parking there? And he scraped the rear fender of his car. He goes, "Dad, like, how do I get this out?" Good luck, man. You just keep scrubbing. You scrub hard on that puppy. And he goes, "How much will it cost?" I said, "I don't know, $1,000. No, I don't know what it, you know, I said $300. Get some new paint on it. A can of spray paint, that take care of that real quick. Not sure it'll be up to your standard, bud, but anyhow, the point is just, and you guys know this, right? Everything deteriorates and falls apart. It's just the way that it is. No lasting satisfaction can occur in the acquisition of earthly things. No matter how much money you have, you always want more. It's never enough. Or you worry about not having enough later on. If you have nice clothes or a vehicle or a camper or an RV, you always want more clothes or a better vehicle or a bigger RV, if that's the desire of your heart, if that's the intention, the pursuit of your heart. Even relationships, family relationships, work relationships, church relationships, which God created us for and calls us to pursue and to really work at, it really takes a lot of energy and time, and it's very fulfilling, and it's what God intended, that we be interconnected with one another and with Him. But if our heart's pursuit is having everything perfect in our relationships, and we don't settle for the imperfections, and I need to be careful. If we don't make room for the imperfections, it's the same kind of message in the song that we sang about. God wants us to come as we are. If our desire, our heart's desire, is to pursue perfection in our relationships, so that ultimately we don't have to rely on God's grace or His mercy or His forgiveness, then we can have this perfect relationship and God is on the periphery just watching everything. Relationships in themselves, though God created us for them, they can turn into idols of the heart, where we become controlling and domineering, and we want everything the way that we want it because we deserve to have it this way. And God created us for relationship. Keep pursuing that. He created us to pick weeds in the garden of our relationships, right? They need to be tended to. We need to long for that. But we will always deal with a degree of mess, just the way it is, right? It will not be perfect, but God calls us to pursue that and to rely on Him to help us become who He desires us to be in our relationships. At the end of the day, God's desire for us is that He would be the primary pursuit of our hearts. And sometimes, folks, pain, injustice, stubbornness, unrepentance, those things, when they impact us, they compel us to love God and to pursue Him. Now, it'll be much better in heaven when sin won't be a part of the whole transaction process in relationships. Sin won't be present. And we'll know and love God perfectly and know and love one another, and it'll be all great. But for now, God calls us to rely on Him. He's the only resource that we have that will carry us into eternity. He's the only resource that we have where we can trust that He will give us the strength that we need to walk through situations that we don't have what it takes to make things perfect and right and just perfect. Verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What? When I read this, I just went, I don't get it. I don't get it how it applies to what Jesus has been talking about in regards to our treasure. And it has to do, though, with our focus. And if we get beyond just wondering, just throwing it out and saying, well, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and begin to think about it. And in reading, I found out some interesting things, initial general things about light and also more specific things. The general thing that Jesus is revealing here is that light just comes into the body through the eyes, right? Very basic. Light comes in. And the better the eyes are, if you think about the eyes like a window, right? And the clearer the window is, the more light gets through. If the window is darkened, if it hasn't been cleaned in a while, then it's harder for the light to penetrate and less light would get in, right? At a very basic level, so Jesus is saying this, but it still doesn't specifically address how it relates to where we go to seek treasures. The word that's translated healthy, if your eyes are healthy, can also mean generous. And a word that's translated unhealthy can carry the meaning of stingy or tight-fistedness. Literally, the words healthy eye would carry the specific meaning of a generous eye, someone who's generous. When your eyes are healthy, you're a generous person, your whole body will be full of light. And I think what Jesus is saying is the presence of God will be revealed in you through a spirit of generosity. because God is generous. And if God is generous, then your generosity reflects his impact and influence on your life. James 1:5 says this, describes God in this way. One, he is one who gives generously to all. That's the same word in Genesis 1:5, same meaning in Luke chapter 6, verse 22. The phrase unhealthy eye, or as the King James Version translates it, evil eye. Interesting. Evil eye refers to a stingy heart. Proverbs 28:22 says, a stingy man is eager to get rich and is unaware that poverty awaits him. What kind of poverty would await a rich man? Well, spiritual poverty, right? You can have everything in the world and you can lose your soul, Jesus says. Don't do that. Proverbs 23, verse 6 says, do not eat the food of a stingy man. Do not crave his delicacies. Literally, in the King James, is a man with an evil eye. Seeking treasures on the earth, spending your time and your energy and finances trying to secure what you believe are valuable assets will shut the light of Jesus out of your life. You'll stop looking and acting and thinking like Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve, to give his life as a ransom, right? To lay his life down. God calls his people to follow in his steps. So Jesus comes and he displays to us a way in which we can display his presence. By loving him and loving other people, by serving him and serving other people. Being there, investing our time and energy and resources in other people. Not just ourselves, not just thinking about what we need, but thinking about what other people need. Do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought. Right? We consider other people. We look to them. What are their needs? A stingy heart doesn't want to give time, doesn't want to give energy, doesn't want to give finances. One of the problems in the North American church is that church people have become stingy with all three of those things: time, energy, resources. And again, it's not that North American Christians don't spend their time or energy or resources. We spend them all over the place. But they're on earthly things. Any believer from, and this is the reason why I say that. In our culture, we don't see that a lot. We don't get it. We go, well, no, I'm generous, right? Because we compare ourselves with other people who look like us. And we just don't get it. But if you bring another person from another culture, let's say from South America, and they'll be overwhelmed. The first thing that will impact them is the materialism in the church. And you go, what? And they say, well, you guys have so much. And you don't realize how much you have to give. But we don't think about how much we have to give. We just think about we need more. Because it's wrapped up in the DNA of our culture. It's infiltrated the church. And we don't see how it's infiltrated our own hearts. How it affects where we invest our time and energy and resources. What we'll say is we just don't have more time to give. We don't have more money to give. We can't afford that. And yet we're the wealthiest. We're the wealthiest culture. It's amazing. And I understand there's always, people are grabbing for your time and your energy and you only have so much to go around. Are we strategic? How we spend our time and energy resources? Are we spending them in a way that would honor God? That it would be the best use of our time and energy and resources? How much time do we even think about how we spend those things? A stingy spirit affects our definition of contentment, because generally speaking, we feel we need more to be content. More money, more time, more love, more respect. More. That stingy spirit also clouds our vision of the value of others. Our pursuits and our desires take precedence over the needs or the desires of other people. That's what a stingy heart tells us. You're more important than the guy next to you. So your time or your energy needs to be spent on you, and then you give a little bit left over to someone else. Stingy spirits also keep us from seeing God's best for our children, our friends, our family, and our church. It keeps us from expressing grace and entices us to ramp up a desire for power and control so that we create an environment where we get what we want, even for our kids. We have a plan for our kids. God has a plan, and you know, hopefully he'll get it right because it's the same as ours, and our kids need to know that. And so we communicate, maybe not for you guys. Maybe I'm alone in this. But there are times when I've heard that parents will have a plan for their kids, and they have a vision of what their kids' lives ought to look like. And it includes, you don't, you know, you miss this, don't do this, right? And you need to pursue these kinds of things. I don't know about you. I think all parents are the same, but I think that all of us have to get in touch with what God wants for us. We need to start there, and from there, then we can get it right in how we approach our relationships, especially being gracious to one another, being kind to one another, making room for God to do what he's doing. We don't always know what it is that he's up to, why it is that this is happening. It doesn't make sense. Finally, a stingy heart distorts our vision of God's will for our own lives. When we look at our spiritual lives with earthly eyes, with a stingy heart, we're far more apt to assume that God would never lead us into places that would involve a decrease in our status, our position, our influence. Our desire for love and fulfillment and joy. There are times when God makes room for that. And we go through seasons that are incredibly painful. But in the midst of those seasons, God calls us back to himself. Living with a stingy heart not only greatly affects how we view God and his will for our lives, which is to glorify him and enjoy him in the midst of life, regardless of what it looks like and feels like for us. It also affects how we view his word and the degree of influence and authority we give God's word. If God is authoritative in our lives, then we would pursue his word. We want to get to know what he has to say to us. But if God is not the pursuit of our hearts, then we have no desire to pursue his word. We have no desire to find out what he wants for us. And I think that if most of us were honest, we'd say that this is a number one telltale sign that our heart's pursuit is questionable, at least, because we have a hard time pursuing him in his word. We don't have time. We don't have time. Too busy. And I know it's true for you because it's true for me. We have too many good things to do. And we miss pursuing God's heart. If we desired God more, we desire his word, we desire to keep him authoritative in our lives, we desire transformation in our own hearts, we'd become not only more biblically literate, where we'd know what God would say, we'd become more biblically passionate, where we'd long to know more of what he has for us. Confession and repentance would become more prevalent, more imperative in the heart, in the hearts of God's people. The pursuit of happiness and self-sufficiency would be replaced by the pursuit of holiness and joy and contentment and faith and trust and hope and love and joy. People in the world would see the generosity of God's people and recognize the fragrance of Jesus. And one day it'll happen. When the government takes away our charitable status and we no longer get tax receipts for our giving. At that point, when God's people choose either to give for the sake of giving, regardless of any benefit for themselves, or they decide that they're not going to give because there's no benefit for themselves, that will make it real clear, real quick, the pursuits of our hearts, the passions of our hearts, where our treasure is, there also will our heart be. There's a story about a famous German general by the name of Bismarck. It was after one of the big battles of the Franco-German War. It had been a grim struggle, but at last the issue had been decided and victory won. And Bismarck, with the tension over, took out a cigar, the last one he had, happy in the thought of a smoke. But just as he was about to apply the match to it, he saw a wounded soldier looking at his cigar with longing eyes. Bismarck understood the appeal. He lit the cigar and gave it to the wounded soldier and saw him in such enjoyment that he almost forgot the pain of his wound. It's kind of what Jesus is talking about. In Luke 16:9, Jesus said, "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings." When you're generous with what God has given you and you share it with other people, you don't seek to buy their friendship, right? You seek to build it. You seek to invest in it, to convey to other people that you value them. How generous are you with your time, your energy, and resources? What is it that you spend the majority of your time or energy in? Where do you find the most joy? What bothers you when you can't do something? You can't purchase something. What happens in your heart? It reveals where your heart is. Verse 24, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." At the end of the day, we need to look at who's our master. Not who's our daddy, right? Who's our master? Who's your master? Jesus makes it clear that we will either seek to build treasures or store up treasures here on earth, or we will seek to build or store up treasures in heaven. To think that we can balance the two desires is an illusion. It just doesn't work, because both of these, God and money, require your utmost devotion, your total devotion. Deuteronomy 6:5 says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart." How much do you have to love him? Well, love him with all of it. How much can I save? No, you need to love him with all of it. You don't hold back. With all of your soul and with all of your strength. Now, the amazing thing is, as we invest everything in the pursuit of God and loving him with everything that we have, the corresponding truth develops that we love other people with everything that we have. It's an amazing thing that takes place. When we serve God, we serve other people. Right? It's the flow of God's heart to release himself, bless everyone, right? Regardless of where they're coming from. That they might know him. And their hearts might be changed in their attitude towards him. Where's your heart at today? Where do you spend your time and your energy and resources? What kind of evaluation have you done in assessing? Is it proportionate? Does it make sense? And I haven't talked anything at all about the rewards that we have in heaven awaiting us, because Jesus doesn't talk about it. He doesn't. There are other places where it talks a little bit about that, and we could bring that in and you know, guesstimate as to what everything looks like, but he doesn't specifically refer to that. But he does say that there are rewards for us, heavenly rewards. And when we pursue him, those kind of things await us. I wonder how much we'll have waiting for us in heaven. We talk about feeling blessed here, and we are, right? Feeling really blessed by family or friends or our health or, you know, where we're at financially, whatever it is, I wonder what it'll be like if our expectation will be met when we get to heaven and we go, "I am so blessed," right? All the things. And I know once you get Jesus, that's good. I mean, that's great. Can it get any better than seeing Jesus in person and having sin gone out of your life? And that's great. But I think that there's more that we don't know about that will be icing on the cake of a relationship with God through Jesus. Would you consider that this week? Think about how you spend your time, your energy, your resources. Is your treasure mostly here, or is it waiting for you in heaven? Worship team, come on up and we'll respond. Would you stand as we respond?